Music makes people come together at festivals, gigs and clubs. We share epic moments. Best friends for the entire set or the rest of our lives. Heineken, live your music. To get your hands on tickets to all the best gigs and festivals, visit heinekenmusic.ie. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Excited to say that I'm here back at the Sync Sessions, brought to you by Heineken, Live Your Music, and I'm going to be talking to the wonderful, the talented Joseph Mount of Metronomy. So if you've been tickled by any of these conversations I'm having with all these amazing people and you're enjoying what we're doing, please let us know. Please give us a review if you can, maybe just a thumbs up, anything just to let us know you're there. It would mean the world to me. If this is your first time listening to the Sync Sessions with me, then you can go back and listen to the other chats that I've had. They're all there waiting for you. People like Django Django, Little Dragon, Daniel Avery, you know, just fantastic chats all waiting there for you to enjoy. So it's very exciting for me to welcome Joseph Mount to the Sync Sessions today. Hi.
Hi. It's very exciting to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. You look very excited.
I am.
Do you mind if we go through your albums? Because you've had so many.
Okay.
And I just want to kind of get a brief sense of what they mean to you,
yeah,
you know, and kind of what the differences are and how you feel one evolved from the next to the next to the next.
Yeah.
And so we'll start with Pip Payne, Pay the 5,000 You Owe Me, which is really a good album title. Come on. I mean, it's nearly as good as my first album title, which was Do You Like My Tight Sweater?
Oh, yes.
No, it's actually probably borderline better. Because I have no idea what it means at all.
Well, that's from... So the title's from the town where I grew up, this place called Totnes. This car one day arrived at the side, put at the side of the road, which had that written on the side of it.
And did it have Pip Payne?
Yeah, it had all that Pip Payne, Pay the £5,000 You Owe, written on the side of the car. And as the month, so this was like when I was in sixth form, I think. And as like every couple of months, it would get replaced with like a different car, mm-hmm, and a different message. And it was this particularly odd and surreal kind of thing to be happening in a kind of bit of a weird town. So it was like, it kind of was poignant for that period of my life. Anyway, this is an update.
Do you think they've ever realised you've made a record and called it that?
I think they must.
You
do.
Should have come down and put like a CD on the windscreen or something.
So there you go. That's that.
So tell me about the record. What is the background there?
Who was
in the band at this point?
There was just that's an entirely me thing. Yeah. It's like an instrumental record mostly. There's maybe like one vocal track.
Did it take you a while to get singing then? Yeah.
I would play around with
oohs and ahs.
Yeah. But never like a proper song. Mm. So yeah, that album's like all instrumental and more of a kind of like closer to the like electronica that I was into.
Right.
But like much more accessible, I think, probably than the stuff I was listening to.
And so that was in 2006. And then Nights Out came out in 2008, which you have a 10th anniversary version of it coming out, like a souped-up version. Is it going to be souped-up?
I think there's some extra bits and bobs.
Extra bits.
Yeah.
Remastered?
No, I don't think so.
You ever got into that whole remastering thing?
I think you got to save that for like the 20th anniversary or like a new format.
Kevin Shields, is it from the
Library
Valentine? He spent like 5 years remastering something. He got so deep into it. I don't know.
I think this led it. It sounds fine.
Does it sound good? Yeah. Obviously, you wouldn't be re-jizzing it up and bringing it out again if it didn't sound good. What is the basis there? Had the band expanded at this point? Had you started to sing more?
Yeah, well, so that record is when I started singing. And by that point, I was doing a lot of remixes and I had started touring with a band. Mm-hmm. There were three of us. So that album was the first like proper release. The first album wasn't like a full on.
So how do you feel about singing?
I'm okay with it now.
Was it a jump to get to start to sing? for you?
Yeah.
You had to push yourself into it?
Yeah.
Did there ever any story? Did anyone ever say to you, you know what?
you sound awful.
I can hear you just say, because what happened to me was somebody said, we were signed and all I'd ever done was like chat a little bit here and there on the tracks. And be more of a kind of just a little adjutant, really. It was going, you don't want to make this and you don't want to make that. You want to make this, you want to do that. Yeah. And then every now and again, I'd go, do you like my tight sweater? See how it fits my body and stuff. So,
yeah.
And then I started to, I sang a little bit. This is in Maloko. Yeah. And I sang a little bit. This is before we finished the first album. I was well singing by the time I got to that stage. And somebody heard a little bit of singing and they were like, you should sing, you should really sing. In fact, it was really embarrassing. It was an American guy in the label who's like, that shit sounds like Nina Simone, man. He's going to Mark, you got to get her to sing. Did anything like that happen to you?
No, not at all.
Because it's a funny thing to start singing. It's
It's
not the same as, there's nothing between you and the other people.
Yeah.
There's no instrument.
Like, for me, it's completely like, it doesn't feel like a strength that you know that people are like insecure about their own. Like, I've worked with people who kind of, you know, who you need to convince, like, that's great, you know, like, that has to happen. And so I'm just aware that whatever I think about my voice, like, is probably like 2 or 3 pegs away from what anyone else would think. So I've never really like really enjoyed singing or thought that I was very good at it. But then
it's a means to an end.
Oh yeah, yeah. But also I also just feel like, well, you know, like that doesn't mean that everyone else is going to have that opinion and. Like, I can listen to people. I can listen to singers and be like, this is horrible. if they think they can sing, like, why can't I?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're in tune and you're writing good songs.
That's the thing.
And there's a fragility to it. Maybe that's there from not being a virtuoso singer.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the third record, which was Not Made for Love.
Oh, that's like an EP.
That's an EP.
Yeah.
Why is it an EP? Why?
It was just like an idea that the record label had, which I was kind of...
Can we talk about record labels? Just going back. So the first one came out...
The first one was this a kind of... Like a guy who set up a record, like an independent label in Brighton.
Uh-huh.
And then I got out of that deal.
You were only in it for one.
Yeah, not even that, really.
Did you try to hold on to you and you had a bit of a struggle to get away? Or?
Kind of, yeah.
That's why you're just calling him some guy, isn't it? You don't want to get too involved. Okay, moving on. So the next one, Nights Out, presumably that came out on a bigger label.
Yeah, so that was with Because Music. And that's the rest of them have been with Because.
Are you still with Because?
Yeah.
So you've just stayed on the same label.
Yeah.
Well, that's unusual, isn't it?
So when Nights Out, we were kind of like looking at... labels, I guess, or like meeting people as you do. And they were the only label of like a few labels that I spoke to, including major labels, and you know, they were the only label that were like, this is cool, like, let's do something. Mm-hmm. And other people were like, it'd be great to hear some more stuff, you know, like
we
didn't quite get it. And that was kind of that to me, like, meant something.
Yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you mean, though. It definitely means something.
When people are like, this is it.
Because it's not actually very often that happens in the industry anymore. It used to be a business that was based on that whole model. Taking a punt, taking a guess.
Yeah.
Best guess is this is going to do well. This person's going to do well. I believe in this person.
Yeah.
And now they're waiting all the time to kind of look at profit and loss. And
so it's hard out there.
And the fact that you've found a home that you feel happy and comfortable on and been able to make whatever kind of music you like.
Absolutely.
It's incredible, really. Yeah.
And to have a kind of, like, to build a relationship is quite an important thing as well. And it means that, like, you know the people that are working, like, with you, you know, and that's quite unusual, I think.
So why the EP?
The EP, that was just like an idea. What would have happened at that point? I think there would have been a few things going on. One was to keep some
momentum. That's a great word.
Thanks.
The industry.
You've lost momentum. Yeah. That's what I hear all the time.
Then you hear a whip crack behind you.
So there was that. I think another thing, which I'm not sure if it necessarily had to do with the release, but up until that point, there had been three of us in the live show, me, Oscar, who's my cousin, and a friend of mine called Gabriel. And Gabriel had, he decided to stop playing with the band. And so around the time of that EP, we knew that he was going to leave. Mm-hmm. So then we were having to get a new thing together or decide what it was going to be. So maybe it was a slight stopgap thing as well.
Which are good. It's good to have a stopgap thing.
And actually, it's weird because at the time I was a bit dismissive of the EP, but now I quite like it.
It gives you a bit of breathing space to try something. And
yeah.
And it's not got the pressure on it of what's the first chart position and this.
Oh yeah, that's a pressure I've never really had to worry about.
And then you had your first breakthrough.
Yeah.
Record, which was the English Riviera.
Yeah.
And had some hits on it.
Yeah, thanks.
Fairly big hits.
Well, I think so. And the interesting thing, and I suppose that I've seen happen to other people since I've been involved in music, is when you see people kind of come and go. And at the time, you would never turn around to them and say to them, this is your moment. you don't know this, but in a year, you're going to be, you'll disappear. I'm saying it the wrong way. But you never
disappear to yourself, do you? That's unfortunate. No, the thing is, you always can see yourself in the bloody mirror.
But I suppose what I'm trying to say is that when the English Riviera happened, mm-hmm. and it had the success that it had, I think at the time I wasn't aware of the significance of the success that it was having.
I think that's the case for everyone.
Completely. And now I realise that it is responsible for my
career
basically. Yeah. Putting it in very basic terms. That record and some of the songs from it are the ones which people which would have first heard of about from Metronomy. And it also got the Mercury nomination, which had this, I think as well at the time when people were asking what kind of effect does it have, and you're I don't really know yet.
Yeah, of course.
and then you realize actually it has this huge effect, and every time it happens on every time the award happens and you hear about it, and people are people you always read in the press, people kind of talking about the significance of it, and they're I don't think it's not what it used to be, and you're I guarantee that being in it makes a huge difference.
I think the hits make a bigger difference, though.
Yes.
Or maybe winning the Mercury Prize would make a fair-sized difference. But even then, there have been acts that have won, and they've come and gone.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a weird one this year. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Lord of Mercy. Did you see anything about it?
No, but I thought, is it Wolf Alice?
Wolf Alice won it.
And they seem worthy. They seem good.
Found it a little.
Good eggs? Easy. I don't know.
I expect it to be somehow a bit more groundbreaking.
I know, but I think that's, everyone always does.
But that was the point, maybe, this year. It was
maybe
worthy was what they were looking for this year.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess for us, or for me, or for, it feels like that album and that opportunity, were really big, and had a really huge...
And at that time, you started to change up the live show as well, because you became a very successful live act.
Yeah.
Around that time too. And that's certainly something that the hits can help you with as well. I know myself from my own experience that if you're ready to build something live, when you've got a few things knocking around that people know, it can really all come together in a beautiful way. Is that what happened to you?
Yeah. And in a way, it was probably serendipitous. Mm-hmm. because Gabriel had left the band. And up until that point, when it was the three of us, we were three keyboards statically standing. There wasn't much going on stage. Yeah. And me and Oscar, we were so when he's gone, what do we do? Do we just replace him, or do we decide to change everything? And we were we'll have a drummer, we'll have a band, we'll make it a band, and we'll just change it. And, mm-hmm. and so that all happened at the same time. And I think it certainly meant that to watch us live became a way more enjoyable thing. Mm-hmm. And if you were into music, it was a much more musical thing.
You added another voice as well around this time. With the girl.
Oh yes. Oh,
what you call
Anna. Anna's the drummer. Yeah, yeah. And on the record, it's a girl called Roxanne Clifford who sings. Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anna does that part live. But yeah, Roxanne Clifford was in a band called Veronica Falls. She sings on the song Everything Goes My Way. But Anna sings on a couple of tracks as well, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, having a, up until that point, I think I just, I tried to pretend to sing like a girl. Like, that was, the, you know, the female parts
did
with
you
me.
You dress like a girl as well? Or
no,
like,
no.
Just sing
I
like
never
it.
Took it that far.
Some stockings and suspenders under your jeans. Nobody could tell.
You never know.
So that really adds a whole other facet to the whole thing when you've got this extra voice as well.
Yeah.
I love bands with a man singing and a girl singing. It's always great. French, in a way.
It's true. The French, generally speaking, I think are more like up for
oh,
that.
We know what they're up for. Here I am, Roisin Murphy, and you're listening to The Sync Sessions, brought to you by Heineken. Live your music. But you lived in, you've lived in France for a while, isn't that right?
Yeah, yeah. So I, okay. So let's fast forward.
Talking about French. No, but no. Yeah, I'm going to go through the next. I mean, we have to do the rest of the albums. I've started.
So
the thing
because the record label, they're French. They have a bigger kind of French element than they do in English. What happened with Nights Out is that we ended up spending a lot of time in France and being kind of really well received and looked after there.
This was touring or you recorded there?
No, touring and like doing promotion and that kind of stuff. And it just meant that since that point, we've had this equal fan base in France and England.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's been something which has been so like, I don't know, like eye-opening for us as you know, the kind of band, the scale that we were on, but to have that in different places and you know, that kind of it not being so English oriented, or you know, like realizing that the music in Europe doesn't just come from England, like in you know what I mean, like in Europe there's like so much stuff going
on. It's tough to make a dent there, and
exactly,
especially in France, because they've got that sort of, you've got to have a certain percentage of French music played on the radio.
It's
very hard market. It's a crack, but there is something in your music that is a bit French pop, you know? But you didn't do that on purpose, it just naturally came out.
No. And I think that's something which I find really like nice is there was probably stuff that's, I've been influenced by like Air or Daft Punk or like that kind of stuff that's kind of crept in. But yeah, I never would have anticipated like there being this connection like musically with the French. So
that was a big, do you speak French?
I do a bit now, yeah. Yeah, well, because my girlfriend is French, and I mean, we've got children, like, I feel a bit silly.
French children, you're really gone for it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I had no choice.
Let's go to the next the next one. Love Letters.
Yeah.
What went on in that then?
So that was like, that album is all recorded. It's like an analogue kind of exercise in recording in the old fashioned way. So it was all done on like 8-track. Tape machine.
Beautiful.
In a place called Torag, which is like in East London, this a studio like willfully stuck in whatever 65 or something. And yeah, it was a bit like a kind of like wanting to make a record in that way, because I'm just, you know, aware that it probably no one's gonna really do that anymore.
But also having restrictions, especially if you're going to be prolific, to set some kind of boundaries or set some template.
Yeah.
When you start out on a big project.
Yeah, yeah.
Must be very, very helpful. And also as a band, what looking at and talking about your journey as a band, you know, you start out on your own, then you have a certain kind of a band, then you have another kind of a band. Mm. You know, you've been very fluid.
Yeah.
All the way through, like many bands, real bands can't be, you know. Yeah. They're stuck with the same recipe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they keep getting the same dish over and over again, you know. But you've been able to be metronomy, but in lots of different ways, which is a great thing, no? It's like a very freeing thing. But then if you're too free and you don't have any structure,
completely,
record after record,
yeah, yeah,
that can be a problem as well, no?
And I think that's the thing which set everything up so that was possible.
The movement, the kind of fluidity.
Yeah, was kind of working on your own, like learning how to do stuff in that kind of isolated way and not, I guess, not really seeing yourself as part of like a specific thing or, you know, like a little scene, you know, like all of that stuff kind of helps you feel like you can do more like whatever you want.
It's great. And then to still be a band as well at the same time. It's a great thing. You've got the best of both worlds. And what... really what I wanted to say about Summer 08
yes.
is what a brilliant record title as well, you know, to call something Summer 08 in 2016. It's to kind of, it's, you know, yeah, it should be like Summer 73 or something, but it's 08.
I'm kind of happy that you think that because
I thought,
like,
it was hilarious.
People, yeah, good. Because no one else really understood it.
I think it's and one of the all time great album titles.
That's very kind. Especially in other countries, they're like Summer 8.
Oh, no.
And then you begin to realise the slight downfalls. So yeah, that was the whole idea that, like, that the first Nights Out, when it was released in 2008, and we were touring all of that year, and this kind of, this summer of 08 was like a lost summer, basically. And I wanted to kind of make a record that this, like, I like the idea of referencing this summer. But as far as a record goes, like, we just finished touring Love Letters, and I just had, like, not had it, but we had had a second child. And I wanted to just, like, make some music and release a record and not tour and just, like...
Right.
And so it was kind of a collection of songs that I kind of hadn't finished, but always liked. But I wanted to do something in this way of a real... Just, like, go into the studio, write some songs, and enjoy it in a very pure way, which is, like, how I first started doing music. And I think something that you can get slightly knocked off course from remembering that sometimes, like... Just to do stuff in a really free way, yeah.
On the other side of that, whilst in between making all this very much your music, have you worked producing for other people?
Bits and bobs, yeah. Like, there's a few. I did like a thing with Roots Maneuver.
Oh wow!
And with Nicola Roberts of Girls Aloud fame.
Oh yeah.
And then recently did the Robin record, which is like
the biggest
thing that I've kind of done, and it's something that I really love doing, and like and kind of feel like is probably
What did you do on that? Did you do more than one thing on that?
On Robin's record? I kind of did most of it in the end.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and was like very involved with the writing and producing and all that stuff. So that was like the first time I've ever done a proper like.
Oh, you're set then, because that's wicked.
Oh, you've heard it?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, yeah. No, it's cool. I mean, like, it was a very intense experience, but, like, really cool, but very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good one. It's a good one to get into. So every time I do this, I ask people to give me 10 tracks.
Yeah. The top 10 tracks.
Well, top 10. Is it top 10? I mean, that's impossible. How could you, somebody who makes music, whittle it down to...
I've done it.
You've done it?
No,
it's your actual top 10?
No, I haven't done it. Easy.
And, well, let's just talk about a few. Jordan Knight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that's actually one of my top 10 tracks of all time. But
I picked it because of the... I really like it as a pop record. I remember it was just tickled me that you'd put it down there, and then I remembered it.
I think when I first heard it, I was working in a fudge shop. That was my big job when I was young. I used to work in a fudge shop, and Radio 1 was always on, and I remember occasionally like hearing stuff which was like really
rugged.
Yeah. Well, like really like amazing. Like I think I first heard like Genie in a Bottle was like on working when I was just working. I was like, oh my god, this is a really good song. And yeah, and I think that's where I first heard the Jordan Knight song, and I remember just thinking like what on earth is this? Like,
you have a pure pop vein going
through. Well, yeah, I had to learn that was the case, you know.
Did you ever feel ashamed?
I did, no, because...
Does anyone ever try to make you feel, oh, that's not cool, or, you know...
No one ever did.
Because it takes kind of balls, in a way.
Well, I think, I was going in my kind of, like, left field electronica world.
Yes.
And I was really into, like, you know, this kind of willfully obtuse music, you know, like, stuff which you have to think about. And then I remember hearing another track which is on there, the What About Us by Brandy. Did I put that on there?
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember hearing that and just being like, hang on, like this song has got like all of the stuff which I really like about electronica, but it's also like you can sing along to
yes.
it. And I think at that point I was like, oh, okay.
It was like light bulbs going
yeah,
off.
Yeah, completely. And at the same time, like I got into like Timbaland, and like the Neptunes were doing tons of production as well. Mm. And suddenly it's like, oh yeah, well, there is this third way of being very like sonically innovative,
mm-hmm.
whilst being like just super catchy, and you know, like you don't have to choose, you can do everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, like that Give It To You by Jordan Knight, I remember that would have been one of the first songs I heard that was just like, how can a song make me like question things?
It's just perfectly symmetrical, that, yeah. Isn't it? It's like, it's just, you know, like when they say that humans are at ease with symmetry.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
It's something that any person, human on the planet would be at ease with the symmetry of that song. Is what I was thinking, kind of like, Jesus. Where there's one thing on one side, it's completely balanced out on the other.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's something that I really like in music as well, to be honest. Yeah. Okay, so then I was going to talk to you about Van Morrison because he's one of my favourite voices, personally.
Well, that was a slightly seasonal selection as well, because I was around the house putting things on. So like Van Morrison's...
What's the album? It's Snow in San
Anselmo.
Anselmo.
The album's like Hard Knows the Highway.
Has the album got... Because I haven't heard this album, but in this song...
Yeah.
What's the song? Sorry.
So that's the song. The song's called Snow in San Anselmo.
It's got this incredible vocal arrangement on it.
Yeah.
Like, incredible, all these voices, like sort of like a choir.
Choral thing, yeah.
Is that across the album or is it just on this song?
This is the most like... So my parents, like, well, my mother is very into Van Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd heard like the more kind of, I guess, like classic Van Morrison stuff. And at some point in my teens, I was like in a charity shop and found this album, put it on. I was like, oh my God, it's like this kind of spacey 70s, like Van Morrison.
The cover
like,
is really sort of like a Miles Davis cover.
Yeah, yeah, and like, yeah, like jazzy. Like,
yeah.
And so that track is probably the most spaced out track on the record. But yeah, I think he's like, a lot of the musical tastes I have come from like my parents.
Mm.
And he is kind of someone that probably like I thought was quite boring for quite a long time. Like I thought like, oh, nice tunes, but like a bit boring. And like he was one of the people that they would kind of take like me and my sister to see.
So you saw him
Yeah, like a few times. But then there's this kind of this musicality that like, you know, that I found out about him on my own like later.
Just the voice does it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I love his voice so much.
Hunky.
Much. So free, so soulful, like, you know, just I love his voice. Anyway, then I picked to talk about DJ Shadow because you've mentioned him, actually. He's an influence on so many people, isn't he?
Yeah.
But it's not like you can really hear it in your music, the influence?
No.
Because he's a bit more blokey, you know.
Yeah. I think
this song is very serious, very heavy, heavy song. But also it's very simple. There's a simplicity to the way it's built, no?
Well, exactly. And I think that's his, like, he would be very influential on me as a kind of, like, he was to teenage, like, boys.
Yes.
Like, trying to make beats in their bedroom.
That's kind of what puts me off him, but yeah, could keep going.
like, you know what I mean? Like, angsty teenage boys, like... He was like, I'm trying to think of the equivalent for kind of angsty teenage girls. But like, you know, someone that like, it's like, oh, like he understands me. And so I think many people try to like build themselves in his image and copy his kind of like tense like beats.
Yeah.
But really, like for me, he was just, you know, someone that the first kind of like bedroom producer that had this kind of really huge
sound
impact. Yeah. And like, yeah, and a big, yeah, and a huge sound. And so, yeah, you can't hear it really in my music really anymore. But if you listen to like the first things I did, they're just like very bad versions of DJ Shadow.
Well, your top 10 is marvellous, and I would
ask
anyone who's listening to this chat to go and have a listen to it. It's on my Spotify. It's great, and it tells a lot about what's made Metronomy.
Cool.
So I think we have come to the end, and I have enjoyed it immensely. I could talk to you for another hour and a half at least, but I know you're a busy man, so I let you go. Like, I've got 25 questions still here to go.
Next time.
Oh, well. So if you've enjoyed this chat I've had with Joe Mount from Metronomy, do go back and listen to the other chats that I've had with other very interesting people, such as Tom Finlay from Groove Armada, Daniel Avery, and I had great chats with Django Django and also with Little Dragon.
To get your hands on tickets to the hottest gigs and festivals, visit heinekenmusic.ie. Heineken, live your music. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.